Hello there, good morning. Thank you so much for being here if you're watching live, and also if you're listening back to the podcast, it is great to have you. It is still relatively early here in the UK, 11:30, because I haven't had enough coffee. But today is an international interview, as we're talking to the most amazing musician in Switzerland, and something that I think is really unique in what is going on at the moment, and trying to provide something of great value to musicians in a really unique way. So we'll get on to her incredible project shortly, but first I'm going to introduce you to the fantastic Gwendolyn Mason. How are you doing, Gwendolyn?
Very well. Thank you, David, for having me on. Good morning to you.
It's an absolute pleasure. And just to throw you right at the deep end, one thing I always start with these that I don't warn you about is that instead of me introducing you and messing it up significantly, I find it's really fascinating to get you to define yourself and what it is that you do in the world, which I can try and pretend is really fascinating from my side, but also a fraction of laziness in there as well. So how do you define what it is that you do and who you are?
That's a really hard way to start the morning. I've only had one espresso.
It's why I didn't warn you.
Thanks. Next time I'm going to have a cup of coffee right here by the side of me.
Exactly.
Okay, how do I define myself? That's a really hard question. I'm not sure if I define myself. I kind of figured out a little bit what I am, what I do. Well, I'm a human being, obviously. I'm first and foremost a human being, and I'm a violinist. I am a fourth generation musician from a long lineage of musicians from Central and Eastern Europe. I'm a violinist, as I said before, but I'm a violinist of a viola playing mother and a violin playing father and a piano playing grandmother and another piano playing great grandmother. I'm a fourth generation teacher as well. I have had the privilege of growing up in a number of places. I was born in Amsterdam. And when I was 5 years old, my parents and my brother and I moved to Cape Town in South Africa. My father spent 30 years being the concertmaster of the Amsterdam Philharmonic, which is now the NETFO, which is the Nederlands Philharmonies, the Dutch Philharmonic, the Netherlands Philharmonic Orchestra. And my mother discovered her teaching for passion, which she probably inherited from her mother whilst we were in Cape Town. She opened up the first private school in the area to enable children of all backgrounds and all ethnicity to study. That made her very loved in some circles and not very popular in others, and has taught me and informed me a lot about how I approach people in general. At a point when the RAND fell in South Africa, before Mandela, before it looked like things might look up, my family and I moved back to Europe, where we stayed in Hungary for a long time. My mother is Hungarian, my father is Dutch, and we spent a lot of time in Budapest, where I also studied for a while, before finally going to Dublin in Ireland, where my parents are currently under very severe lockdown, and I haven't seen them since January, so I miss them very much. I'm living here in Switzerland, where I assumed third level studies when I was finishing school, and use it as a base whilst traveling and studying in Italy and in Germany and in Switzerland. And I am talking to you right now from Switzerland, where I hold a teaching post in the Geneva University of Music. And of course, like everyone else, terribly miss playing performances, playing live, the exchange with other musicians, with audiences worldwide in this very strange and troubled time.
Very much so. And from hearing you talk then as well, it's really refreshing to hear such an international life, because at the moment we're not only finding it very hard to be international, but finding it very hard to travel outside of our small little abodes and where we're currently based. But you must have had so many different influences on your, not only just your life, but your musical thought process and artistic output from having all of those experiences around the world. What have you taken from having such a broad and open world upbringing and career?
What haven't I taken? when you have the privilege of, it's a double-edged sword. So there is a certain loss of a sense of home and familiarity when you travel as much as most musicians do. Most performing musicians won't be in the same space for any greater length of time. either because of their studies or because of travel, or which is combined with teaching or performing or music making in some form. In my case, there's a sense of uprootedness, of course, as there would be from that kind of a background. There's a sense of assimilation, of trying to understand other cultures and people, and a lot of the music that I've heard in those countries have informed how I feel music, how I convey it, what it evokes for me. It has informed the language use, the languages I speak, the fact that I don't speak any one of them fluently, but I do try. The fact that when I'm living here in Switzerland, my Irish accent just goes, and as soon as you put me in a room with Irish people, then it just, the banter starts and it comes back. It's a bit of a chameleon life, and at the same time, it's this never-ending search for identity, for identification with others, and it has helped me hugely when it comes to how I make music and understand people, and has enabled me to try and be continuously aware of the fact that at any point in any day, something might happen that will humble me immensely and bring things crashing back down to the most essential, in my case, a sense of connection, of understanding, of love, of course, and a huge passion for music.
Massive passion. Definitely. Well, before we get on to the crashing down that we've all experienced in the world very recently, it'd be great to talk a little bit about your project, which has gone online. But before then, I'm guessing it was always going to be something in person. So this is the Exhale, your which is now an online retreat. But before this crisis, what was the Exhale supposed to be?
Well, the Exhale is an idea I've carried around with me for many years. The whole objective of the Exhale was to create a community, a safe space, where people get in touch, musicians and performers get in touch with all kinds of holistic approaches to learning, to teaching, to playing, to understanding and integrating music in the very essential way of having not just a lifestyle as a musician, but being a musician, being a performer. And I spent months preparing it. It was to be an entirely offline retreat, a place where musicians would begin their day with yoga, and it would be followed by choir singing. And of course, people would say, well, we can't really sing. That's fine. I wouldn't care about that. We'd all sing anyway. The objective was to sight read music and to test our voices and to see whether on the Monday when we would start, we would have the same vocal range as on the Sunday when we would finish. Then we were going to enjoy three meals a day, but they wouldn't just be any old meals. They would be meals prepared by local chefs who would source organic and regional products with as little waste making as possible, and would explain to musicians the benefits of eating simple but healthy food rather than feeling confined to fast food when on tour, etc. We would have individual lessons. Chamber music, which is a huge passion of mine and which I just love. And every late afternoon and evening was going to be spent with a different kind of workshop or session or seminar on different topics that I think inform a player immensely. So there was going to be movement and somatic experience, such as Alexander technique, Feldenkrais, dyspokinesis, and we were going to also dabble in things that I find hugely important, such as improvisation, music theory, but presented in an exciting way, compositional analysis, and I absolutely also wanted to involve things such as meditation and understanding of what that could mean and how you can adapt the very idea of meditation to suit your life. And in fact, also we wanted to involve entrepreneurial know-how. So we wanted to give people a place where they could start to indulge in the idea that they could, if they were feeling stuck in an organization and wanted to learn how to freelance, could do so without stepping into the void, but receive some tools in understanding how they could go about doing that. So it was supposed to be this full, very holistic package. My intention was not to have people walking out the door after a week going, oh, I know what yoga is all about, or, oh, I can go off and teach Alexander technique now. The idea was that they would get a refreshing scent of it from people I've worked with closely, who I strongly recommend, a bit of a one-stop boutique, where particularly for those who had questions but didn't know how to formulate them or had been looking for such a thing online and not finding it, because to this day, in many cases, if you put the words yoga and classical music into Google search, what you'll find is Indian classical music, which is of great value, but not necessarily the motivation behind a person looking for yoga and classical music. So perhaps they were wanting to find out how they could do yoga for particular ailments that they might experience as classical musicians, for example, or what they should know about yoga so that they would prevent themselves from being injured unnecessarily, or breath, and how breath can inform performance, interpretation, and also a sense of psyche, and so on. Well, all of that, of course, came tumbling down. None of that was going to happen. It was supposed to happen at Easter. And after spending a few days... Yes, it was a pilot project. Yeah, we had no idea how it would go. We had hoped to have 24 participants, at least 48 at max. We couldn't manage more at the time in the location I had sourced. We had our participants. Everybody was up for it. I was so excited. Faculty were coming in from all over Europe. And then it crashed, and everyone got their deposits back. And I walked around in a daze for a while, and then decided that I would try my arm at bringing it online. And I had the great fortune of meeting one or two very, very strong and extremely capable women who helped me to bring this to a wider audience. And we're not trying online to, first of all, we're certainly not trying to replace the human experience of the actual human interaction with someone. We understand that that is limited online, particularly for music. And we're also not trying to compare sound production, you know, somebody's A sounding so much more lush than somebody else's A or something, because working from our homes in confinement, particularly at the very beginning of this lockdown, where even if you tried to source a microphone, some people were waiting 3 weeks on receiving one before they could go online to do any kind of sensible teaching. We wanted to allow people an experience at home that they could experience in the privacy of their own four walls. What we've noticed is that there's a lot of people with a lot of questions who feel shy to ask them, shy to find out how to experience them. And what's very important to me at the Exhale is that we create a safe space, a community of like-minded people, of like-minded individuals who understand that playing violin or cello or piano is much more than just moving your fingers along a keyboard or along a string. And I'm working very hard at, I hope that it's accepted. I think it's very important that we try to destigmatize a lot of things in the world of classical music, particularly that are seen as weaknesses. So, for example, if somebody says, I've had repetitive strain injury and I figured out a way how to deal with it and overcome it, rather than seeing that as a, oh, that person's had repetitive strain injury, and then coming to incorrect conclusions about why that might have happened and judging that person for that idea of having that strain injury, repetitive strain injury, seeing and understanding that that vulnerability has led to an immense strength, and that we have so much to learn, and that musicians are human and we fall down and we make mistakes and we are taught for better or for worse, and we are having a chance to access knowledge or not, and this is a huge issue that I see in classical music, also where I teach. There are people constantly having to deal with the strain and pressure of being a musician. Of course, it's a charmed life. It's an amazing life. Music is such a wonderful thing to be able to nourish yourself with every day. But there's a lot of pitfalls. There's a lot of difficult things to deal with. Everything from what it does to our body and how we feel it and how we can work with it rather than against it. What it does with our psyche. We had a wonderful panel discussion where I asked some notable musicians, including a very dear friend who I deeply respect and admire, Natalie Klein, coming online, as well as Mate Such, who's a wonderful viola player, coming online to discuss stage fright, something that is a huge taboo topic in many places of study. One does not have stage fright. We are infallible. We are bulletproof. We go on stage. We play. We're wonderful. We never make mistakes. We have no memory lapse. We live in this charmed world where we look fabulous at all times. We never age. All of these things that are nonsense. They are unrealistic and they are detrimental to our art form. Musicians are able to convey and portray stories in music and storytelling through music because of their vulnerabilities, because of their fragility, and because they have taken the time to explore it and have learned a strength in all of that. And I find that in many universities across the world, many institutions across the world, these kind of things aren't being discussed And I'm sure there's many reasons for that. There's no time, there's no money, whatever. And with the exhale, I feel like I can go, I can go and do something without having to worry about what anyone thinks of it. And all I have to worry or care about is how participants react to it, how they feel about it, and whether it can impact positive change. That's really something that is very much at the root of what I'm trying to do with it. Well, I can talk of my own experiences and the things that I've heard and the things that I've experienced with, well, when we went online, in fact, rather than having only two cooks to look after 48 people and more because of faculty, we had four amazing chefs from across the world. We had Tara Lee Byrne, who is one of my closest, if not closest, friend. She is a cellist who turned to an understanding of raw food and cuisine or cuisine artistry. She was or is currently in Byron Bay, stuck there. Laura Lieber from the UK and two Swiss young chefs preparing food. I think that one of the biggest misconceptions of how we feel, whether we are suffering from brain fog, as I call it, or I think, in fact, it's already a term that has been coined, brain fog, that idea of not being able to battle through a certain state of fogginess in the brain, quite easily explained, or lethargy, or inertia, or a lack of ability to focus, or, in fact, even a issues with pain throughout the body, people don't consider enough that these things could be linked to food, and which is, in fact, one of our primary sources for energy. So what it is that we take as far as liquids and food is concerned. For example, there continue to be people who believe that there's a lot of value to olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, cold pressed, and there is. But perhaps not if you heap it in gallons across a salad, and certainly not if you heat it, because once you heat it, you break down the very essence of what it is that made it cold-pressed and useful for your body in a particular way. It's amazing how many people don't know that, and therefore continue to prepare food that actually may not agree with them, or that they might have an intolerance to, that they don't realize they have an intolerance to. Or, for example, very basic, nearly mundane, I'd say, associations. Someone comes on stage, potentially a string player, and has what I call Toblerone bow, which is where the bow jumps across the string in a fit of nerves. Well, of course, we can assess the person, and we should assess that person in a complete way to try and figure out why that might be happening. But one very easy go-to would be, well, did you have a cup of coffee before you went on stage? Do you understand what caffeine does to your body? We could also ask, have you had enough sleep? Do you understand what sleep does to your body? I mean, this goes in so many directions. I find that in the world of sports, where incidentally there's generally also more money, there is more done to educate people completely. So a typical sports star, like every other star who has an entire village behind them enabling them to be stars, would however have a physiotherapist. So they might have a massage every day or every second day. They would have a nutritionist telling them what they should and shouldn't eat and what they should consider eating before a match or before a game. That is not anything that I have been in touch with during my time studying at a conservatory. It might have been on the curriculum. I didn't spot it. And I think it is one very basic element, a very fundamental element of being a human being and being a musician. I mean, we shouldn't forget that even if we talk about performance being something that we shouldn't have to measure ourselves against. We are performers. We go on stage and we perform. And other than, unlike an athlete, we don't just go on stage and run marathons, so to speak. We interpret. We go on stage and we do all these things all at the same time, and we expect ourselves to manage to do that without considering every aspect of our life consciously and with an awareness of what it is that we're doing. And in many cases, we don't have time, we don't have resources, we don't have funding for it. There's hundreds of reasons why musicians and performers, with performers I also mean non-musicians, it could be a dancer, it could be an actor, don't have enough access to this kind of knowledge, which I think is incredibly important. And in some cases is only something we're hungry for when we're at the point of pain, at the point of discomfort, at the point where we don't find answers in our direct environment. I agree to it. I agree with it, sorry.
Or to it.
I agree with it. I can, again, only talk about my own background or what it is I see. At that end of the spectrum of music making where you are dabbling in life as a soloist, or dabbling in life as a chamber musician in a quartet, in other words, you're very much exposed and you're very much expected to deliver a performance, regardless of what time of day it is, where you are, what time zone you're in, what mood you're in, and any history of what you've experienced in the week coming up to that point. I think there isn't much space for mistakes in the world of classical music. It starts from the very essence of training. If you look and so I did a PhD on comparative analysis of how we teach violin from Viotti in 1750 right up to now. And what I've noticed in the treatises that are written is that depending on who you're reading from and whether it's been translated into your language from another language, there's a certain sense sometimes of a bit of a scolding tone. So for example, Auer would have said that vibrato, if used on every note, is something for the circus. Good luck with that then, eh? You're a clown now. You're no longer a violinist. You're a clown if you do that. There's a sense of being scolded from the very get-go. There's a sense of having to practice. There's a sense of being the fastest. I mean, literally, this idea of competition. I understand the reason for competitions, and in some cases it's very good and important to have them. But on the other hand, I also think it's interesting that there are very famous musicians who've come before me who have said that competition is for horses. So yes, you can time an athlete who's the fastest at the end of the race, but is there any point at the end of the race? Is there any point in timing the fastest Paganini caprice? And what does that do to your psychology? Is that healthy? Is that music? Is that art? Yes, subjectively and objectively, you can work through music. So there are objective standards that one can and should achieve if one wants to make a life out of being a professional classical musician. But where does that line get crossed between objective understanding and subjective? So I think one aspect, for example, that is far too little discussed, and where, for example, certain institutions, I'm familiar with Guildhall, for example, are far ahead of many others, which are in comparison to the Dark Ages, where we talk about mental health and mental well-being. In certain cultures, the very notion of discussing that is immediately associated with something being mad or crazy or off balance or needing some kind of pharmaceutical drug to deal with things. That's nonsense. If we feel imbalanced or if we're not in a good space, the more we don't talk about it and the more we find nowhere where we can go to talk about that, and the more that we don't find any understanding for that, the more we end up going into a spiral of being subjected and exposed to something that's not good for us. And all of that, and this is one of the main points, it all feeds back into our integrity as musicians and into our humanity as musicians. I personally find that the most memorable performances that I've heard live or via recordings are the ones that show the human side of players. They're not the ones that are perfect. They're not the ones that were edited to within an inch of their lives. They're not the CD productions where you can tell from a mile away they've spent years on this and they've cut every note. They're the ones that just speak to you from the heart. They're the ones that are so far beyond the need to describe them as perfect or technically brilliant, because they go far beyond that. That you don't even think about that anymore. You sit there looking at these people immersed in their ability going, wow, this is changing me. This is moving atoms around. This is changing my life. This is going to have impact. And this is far beyond, where does my little finger go on the bow? And, oh, I played that D sharp out of tune and the teacher is going to be so upset with me, or my mom is going to be upset with me, or the critic in the audience is going to write scathing remarks about me. Well, I wish that the critics were still writing about us, but in any way, if you know what I mean. So there's a lot of this idea. We compare ourselves to other people. We're constantly being presented with these amazing artists who we live or try to aspire to being like or live up to, rather than seeing them as role models and then trying to figure out what we can do for ourselves to be the best version of ourselves.
Massively. I couldn't agree more. And especially with the approach that it's what you're trying to communicate as a human rather than it being something that's completely perfect. I'm really curious to talk to you about how your participants are finding the Exhale. But before we get onto that, I'm also very curious as to your experience of moving something completely onto online. I think that's something that we've all as musicians related to, that all of a sudden, whatever projects we had or we're then going to have to do, we then have to try and get them online. What has been your experience in getting an entire retreat, something that is very much you go away physically somewhere to get the benefit of it? How have you managed to get that online and replicate the retreat elements, and what challenges have you faced generally with being online?
Do we have another hour?
Potentially, yes. Also, it turns out it's a very good question about what challenges you face with going online. As it turns out, I muted my microphone halfway through that and missed one of the questions. So it's going to be technology is always fun.
Yes, absolutely. And it bears a very interesting sort of last uncharted territory for musicians in a way, because the very thing in the essence of what we're trying to do, which is kind of be in tune with one another, like to be in resonance with one another, to potentially play with one another. As far as I know, at this current state of my knowledge, June 2020, there isn't an accurate way of playing together online simultaneously. There's a lag time issue, there's internet quality issues, there's there's a whole list of things that can and will go wrong. And if you're lucky to have a huge team behind you, people bringing you online, then that's wonderful. And if you've been online for decades, then that's even better. But if you're trying to adjust to the situation and well, first of all, there's going to be imperfections, there's things that are going to go wrong, and it's very important that if you are teaching somebody, you mention that, and that you, like, you say there are things that could go wrong, and please give me feedback so that we can try and tweak things to optimize things that have gone wrong. What I've noticed is that I haven't slept very much during this entire lockdown because I've been so busy trying to get things online. When the Exhale first went online, we tried to replicate the retreat, whereby we would start the day at 8 in the morning and finish at 8 or 9 at night, and every hour would have a different subject, or every 2 hours. So there would be sessions that last an hour or 2 hours, and we would literally go through the day, start it with yoga, end it with yoga. And in between, we would squeeze in lots of things. So the faculty grew from 11 to 26 during its first 2 weeks online, and it's growing and expanding ever since, and it's incorporating artists from all over the world. We've got Canadians and Americans, we've got Australians, we've got people from the UK and Ireland, we've got Swiss people, German people, French people, online Hungarian people, online teaching in their respective languages, and very much trying to create an oasis at the exhale and show a sign of their work that they either aren't in a position to do so when they teach normally or haven't challenged themselves to do so yet. And so we're taking away the extra challenge of having to figure out how to get online and get people to notice that this work is going on, but just enabling the framework for them to focus on the actual thing that they want to impart and share online. So it's a huge learning curve. We are not multimillionaires with this gorgeous studio and this amazing distance learning kit, which is fantastic and very important to have. We don't have it, and we know that, so we're not trying to impart that kind of knowledge at the Excel. It's very much about each person's personal experience. Just to mention that at the offline exhale at this master course, which is a retreat in itself, at the end of that week, there was not going to be a concert. There wasn't going to be this moment when we are once again placed in a situation where we're performing for other people. And that's not because I don't love performing. I personally love performing, and I love performing concerts very much. But the idea was that there was no constant and nearly whispered challenge of having to prepare for something. The entire journey is an internal one. It is about trying to understand something better about yourself and then being given the time and the space to think about it, to incorporate it, to take what you like from it, to throw away what you don't like, and not to be subjected to other people's incessant pummeling of criticism at you, but to experience it for yourself and to see, can you grow out of that? The offline world is a different one to the online world, certainly, and online has its pitfalls, for sure. But we're learning as we go along. I have great admiration for what you are doing online. I think it's amazing work. So thank you, David.
Very welcome. And I think very similar to everyone, it's just of trying to sort of educate yourself with what you can find online in terms of information and learn as you go along and be aware that failing's fine and having that as part of your process. And again, we're not multimillionaires with studios, but equally this potentially couldn't have happened at a better time in terms of in history, in terms of technology, where your phone can be an incredible camera that can connect people all over the world. Just thinking back, 10 years ago, if you had like a BlackBerry and whatever that was going on in that, and social media wasn't working in the same way at that point of history, how hard this would be for us. So it is hard, but at least we have some tools to really help us connect, which is a huge relief, I think. So the participants who are involved within the Excel at the moment, what sort of feedback have you had from them, and how has having this as an online retreat sort of affected them as well?
There's been a lot of positive feedback. I would suggest that most of it's positive. And if people aren't being positive, they're not telling us. They're whispering about us behind our backs. I actually don't think that, to be quite honest, I mean, the whole point of the exhale is that very idea of negative criticism, which often is centered at something to do with the person criticizing and has very little to do with the thing or person they are criticizing. We're trying to suggest that criticism, is when it's constructive, is hugely helpful. So everything about that and about feedback is centered along that idea of we are here, we teach, we guide, but we are also eternal students. Tell us more. There's a couple of things about the exhale to bear in mind. Each session, each workshop, we're treating like a live performance. So this is not a sort of a mecca where you just walk in and from day one there's this library of information and you can just dip in and out of whatever you want. I mean, we're going to have to spend quite some time online to be able to enable that. Every session is unique. Every session is created for the exhale. We are trying to be very personal. We've had conversations and panel discussions where we've had lots of participants, up to 40 or 50 at a time, which is fantastic. We offer them a space to ask questions, and where we know that many numbers are going to come, we ask them to email their questions to us in advance. But in general, at the exhale, a typical class will have around 14, or a session will have around 14 to 18 people at it. And amazingly enough, over time, you figure out how to actually connect with each person individually. So that's one important thing to note. The other thing to note about the exhale is that the exhale is donation based. When the exhale would have been an offline thing, it would have been competing on the market, so to speak, with any other pricing of any other master course. Having said that, it was always clear to me that as soon as you do a yoga retreat or anything else like that, it is expected of you to have a lot of money. I mean, a typical yoga retreat on a Greek island with room and board, which is pretty simple, and anything up to 3 or 4 hours of yoga work, which for a musician, 4 hours a day is not that much. I mean, we're used to 8 or 9 or 10 hours of stuff, can cost you $2,000 easily, and you haven't flown there, you haven't had your meals yet, you haven't gone out to explore where you're at. That's the kind of money that, in my eyes, third level students certainly don't have very easily. So the whole point of the Exhale is to offer all this luxurious immersion in other forms of art and other approaches to our art form and other ideas of movement and music, but at a price they could afford. So I had funding from foundations. We applied for foundations for funding to get support. With the Exhale Online, it's mind-boggling now. We have a completely different scenario to deal with. We need to be honest about this. A huge amount, and I don't know the statistics, a huge amount of people that I'm personally in contact with that I know of are currently unemployed. They are highly qualified and skilled musicians, amazing human beings. They are actors, they are dancers, they are people who have honed their skills over decades, and they are literally worth thousands of euro per performance, and they are unemployed. They have absolutely zero income, and they are looking at zero income until next year. And this is not a question of, oh, performers just want to stand on stage and be loved. Well, actually, no, performers suffer. Nearly all of us suffer every time we go on stage at some point, kind of going, do I actually, am I feeling this right? Is this going right for me? I mean, it's the exception of the performer says, I never have stage fright. It's easy as anything. Performers go on stage because they feel compelled to. That is their life, and they've spent years working on myriad skills to get there. And one could compare it to an education in medicine. I mean, a good doctor has as long of an education and as expensive an education as any musician would. And yet those doctors are on the front line. I don't know if they're earning money or not, but they are suffering in their own way, having to deal with this problem right now. On the other end of the spectrum, there are many musicians who are furloughed, but their furlough is maybe coming to an end. Or in some very extreme cases, there are people who have literally been unemployed from one day to the next with no perspective. And if you look at the measures being taken to ensure that this pandemic doesn't get worse, if anything gets the curve is flattened, we have to acknowledge the fact that for a lot of musicians, this is possibly the most difficult time of their lives. To that end, the faculty that we have at the Exhale, we are very intent on paying, whether they are furloughed or not, whether they are employed or not. We want them to be recognized for the incredible wisdom and knowledge they're passing on. At the same time, we are aware of the fact that a very strong part of the people we are talking to and working with have very little financial aid right now. So a lot of our classes, when we began the Exhale and also continuing forward, are for free. In the first 2 weeks of the Exhale being online, more than 45% of workshops were for free. You have a possibility to donate, and those donations either go to a charity of choice of the person teaching you. So we've also been supporting various charities such as Yoga Stops Traffic. We have supported Purple Valley. We have supported Caritas here in Switzerland. And we're also working towards charities to help musicians at this difficult time. And it's very important for us that the people we are talking to realize that they can actually go to us at a price that they can afford, without, on the other side of the spectrum, having faculty members just working for free regardless of any consideration of their current financial background.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic and such a wonderful inspirational model for people who potentially don't have the financial access to really get the benefit of any programs that are available, especially at a time when, if there aren't performances and there's no direction to what musicians can do during this time, this could be a fantastic opportunity for people to really have that sense of purpose, of continuing creativity, and also being engaged with the community, which is lacking for all of us right now. So is the Exhale still open for people to join? Can they still participate and be a part of these classes?
Yes, thank you for asking, David. Yes. So the Exhale went from spending around 9 months trying to get it into an offline retreat as a pilot project. Well, that got cancelled. Then I spent 2 weeks with the support of Joanne Green, a wonderful violinist, and Fran Wilson, a wonderful pianist and blogger, getting it online. We worked, and this is not an exaggeration of the truth, all day, every day to get this online, because at the end of the day, we are musicians, not necessarily skilled IT experts. We had to accumulate a vast amount of knowledge to get it online, to get classes scheduled for people to be able to get enrolled, etc., and have private invitations, have instructions as to how to prepare for class, everything. We went online for 2 weeks, didn't sleep during that. That was our first pilot project, which then became a pilot project online. And during the 2 weeks, we had more than 114 events with more than 1,000 bookings across those 2 weeks. And we created 5 different places on social media for people to connect and communicate, including a group on Facebook called the Exhale Cafe, where you can become a member and post topics of interest that you would like to see discussed or touched upon at the Exhale. We took 2 weeks to go offline and to assess what had just happened, which was mind-blowing for many of us, and in my case, to get a bit of sleep. I have a 5-month-old baby, so spend a bit of time with him so that he doesn't actually forget who I am. And the beauty is, by the way, for any working moms of teaching online, is that every now and then, if you're only being seen up until here, you can actually breastfeed.
Definitely a bonus.
It has its advantages. So we've taken 2 weeks to assess where we've come to, where we're at, to talk to faculty to see what we can do to purpose or repurpose or keep things the same, change things around, to connect to all the people who participated, to be in actual contact with them personally, one-to-one. And we are going back online since yesterday. Leading the charge was Paul Harris, one of the UK's most influential educators, who has debunked the theory that music theory is boring or dreary. It is quite the opposite, and he's going to be with us all summer long. We're planning on having the Exhale online 3 to 4 days a week, usually midweek, Tuesdays to Thursdays, at times that we hope are accessible not just to audiences in Europe, but also to those staying up late in Australia or waking up early in New York. And we've expanded the curriculum yet again to involve even more subjects that I think are very important to our education and our understanding and learning, and also just to our experience. So what we see at the Exhale is not just a huge amount of third level students, but also a lot of professional musicians looking to refocus or indeed change the direction of their careers right now, and compelled with one very interesting thought that I feel I certainly want to answer for myself. After this vast amount of time in lockdown where we have not been heard, how do we want to sound when we come out of this? What do we want to play? How do we want to perceive ourselves and be perceived? Is this a time of learning? Is this a time of reflection? Can we see the positive aspects of having to, in a way, go dark right now? Which is an awful way of calling it. I know that Stephen Hough had a Wigmore recital recently, which had a huge amount of my friends in tears. Unfortunately, I didn't see it, but I can very well imagine the impact as a musician watching such a fine pianist playing for an empty Wigmore Hall. That's, if you actually understand the entire depth of what this is doing to our industry, that is heartbreaking and also incredibly uplifting. And I wonder whether at that brink, at that edge, we have a lot to learn that could help us moving forward as a community.
Very much so. I think it's a fantastic point to end on. So if someone's watching or listening back to this and they really want to be a part of the Exhale, not just for the workshops and the teaching or yoga or nutrition or mental health and well-being or anything else, but they also want to be a part of the community, how can they get involved and where can they find out more about the Exhale on the internet?
The easiest place to find it, the one that's most holistic and has everything in one space, is our website, which is what's the word? The-exhale.com. That's the-exhale.com. I was about to say minus sign. That's me translating. awful. The-exhale.com. And you will find at the bottom of the page all of our social media. We have a YouTube channel where we will be, over time, of course, we're catching up with ourselves. We're going to be showing some of the classes that were held in part. And we're going to start live streaming our Artist Cafe, which is a panel discussion where we ask faculty members and outside guests to discuss topics that we find important and interesting, everything from how do I solve my tendonitis to impactful topics such as interpretation and analysis, all kinds of things. And we're doing those weekly for sure, involving people from the world of music and outside the world of music. We are on Facebook with a page and a group, the Exhale Cafe, where you become, where you can become a member and join in the conversation. We are on Twitter and we are on Instagram. So there's a lot of places where you can find us. And the hope is that the Exhale will stay in part online for a very, very long time, not just because of COVID staying around for a long time, but because we think that the impact of being able to learn online without having to travel long distances and spending a lot of money on stuff that is not necessarily the very essence of what you've gone there to learn for and from or exchange with, we will keep that online. And hopefully one day when I can responsibly do so, we will start planning our offline retreats again.
Incredible. And it's such an inspiration to hear how you've really gone to got going so fast with moving such a big element onto being online and finding ways to help musicians during this time. So if you're listening and watching, please do check it out. It does sound like the most incredible elements. And if you want to be part of round two, all the information is I'll link in the description to the videos and on the podcast as well. Well, thank you so much for watching and listening. If you want to listen back to any of the other interviews, they're all on the website, which is david-taylor.org. And they're available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and about five more that I've never even heard of. And also, if you want to have a look on social media, it's david-taylor-uk. Sorry, underscore UK. I'm getting the wrong sign as well. So david-taylor_UK. Thank you much. And thank you again for joining us, Gwendolyn. It's really absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you very, very much.
Fantastic. Hope you have a good day. Bye-bye.